now, stay tuned for Mrs. Green Goes Mainstream, a fun and informative green talk radio show that features guests from all over the country who talk about how living green can improve your lifestyle and be fun. Visit Mrs. Green's website, www.mrsgreensworld.com, for more information about her guests.
Hello, Tucson. Hello, world. Happy hot Saturday. A really cool 104 today. Yeah. Don't be running during midday. That's all I can tell you. If you do, take a shower first and drink a lot of water. This is Mrs. Green Goes Mainstream News Talk 790 KNST. We have another action-packed show today. Thank God I'm from New Jersey because I'm going to have to talk really fast, and I might barely be able to get a word in edgewise, but somehow I think I will be able to. So let's just go right off the bat. My buddy Eric Schoberg from Tucson Electric Power is calling in. He knows more than you ever wanted to know about residential new construction programs, their energy efficiency, the sealed envelope, as I call it. So let's go right to Eric Schoberg from TEP. And hi, Eric.
Hi, Mrs. Green.
How are you?
I'm doing super today.
Gosh, and you really do know so much about residential new construction. So what do you want to talk about? It's all about you, and you get to talk about whatever you want. There's so much going on at TEP.
Well, we do have a lot. We do have a lot going on. Of course, the Guarantee Home Program is, our flagship. But I really thought maybe we'd talk a couple technical areas, maybe. There's radiant barrier, tech shield, low E windows are a couple of my favorite topics, and I'm not sure if you've talked about them.
I have not,
and
it would be really good if you did. So just that is great content. Explain to people what that is.
Okay, well,
they are.
Absolutely. You know, whenever you see ductwork, the coiled type of duct, and it's all shiny.
Right.
Or if you ever open up a bag of potato chips and you happen to notice that the inside is like an aluminum foil.
Yes.
Or if you're talking about low E windows, these are three different examples of radiant barrier or low emissivity surfaces. And what it is, it's like a spectrally selective mirror. And it's just an amazing thing it's kind of counterintuitive. I mean, how would you think that just a shiny surface could be, shiny metallic surface could be so effective? But what happens with these shiny metallic surfaces is they reflect the energy that's around them, but they don't give up their own heat.
Okay,
so
I get it.
It's really exciting to me. If you put that on the underside of a roof deck, for example, can you imagine what that might do?
Right, right. So where do these coatings go in an energy-efficient home?
An example would be if you put them underneath the roof deck of your, in your attic.
Right.
Then when it's 105 like it is today,
yes,
and the roof deck is building up heat to be 160 like the sidewalk or anything else,
right,
what happens is that radiant barrier just reflects back the lower temperature of the house below it and doesn't let that 160-degree heat into the attic. So it keeps the attic cooler.
Okay,
and
so
that's a great example.
That's a great example. Now, what about when it's cooler? Is there a reverse effect, or is it really meant to keep out hot air?
No, it works,
you know what I'm saying?
Works in the heating season just as well.
Okay.
So if you have that radiant barrier, then it is reflecting the warmer temperature of the attic back toward the ceiling and not letting that heat escape. So it's not cooling the attic. So it works. So it works in either season, and it does the same thing. In the example of low E windows, are kind of like radiant barrier for your windows. So if it's really hot outside, it's reflecting that heat back to the outside and keeping your cool in. On the other hand, during the winter season, if it's warm inside, it's reflecting that heat back into the house and not letting it escape through the window. So it's a great high-tech technology that works in either season. And, anywhere that that you can use it.
And the ultimate impact, I know, is that you use less energy, so your utility bills are lower. It, when I went and did a tour of your one of your Guarantee Home properties, I cannot believe the difference. That just two things that, that just blew me away. And when you really have good windows in terms of keeping the hot air out, but then in the winter letting it in, because the sun here is just such a powerful force that can be used in our favor if you have the right technology, correct?
Yeah, that's exactly right. And, you know, I mean, we're just, I was just talking about one, you know, one thing, radiant barrier or low emissivity, but you have to combine it with, you know, great insulation. You have
right.
to combine it with a sealed envelope so that you're not getting unconditioned air or just leaking into the house, but keeping your temperatures, keeping your air, you know, within the home kind of confined. You know, you pay to condition that air, and you don't want to have too much of it exchanging with the outside.
With the outside air. And I think
right.
one of the things that it's one of the least expensive things that people can do, and in older homes, probably one of the most beneficial, and that's weather stripping. So much gets eroded from the doors opening and closing, you know, just wears off a little bit. And if you can see a little crack underneath, it was shocking to me how much air goes out if you're cooling your house or heating it. So it's,
yeah, exactly. We've looked at that, and you know, older homes are leakier, and there's a lot of things that you can do just as a homeowner that are pretty quick. In fact, I saw a great kind of weather stripping. You know, we like the foam and the rubber backed and those kind of things, but there's one that looks just like a little. It's just like a little plastic hinge that you would. I mean, it's long, you know, it's just whatever, 6 or 8 feet long, comes
right.
on a roll. But you can put that in the hinge side of a door, and then when the door closes, it just completely closes that gap, and it's very thin, so it's not bulky or doesn't keep the door from closing smoothly, and it just goes on in a second.
And it's readily available at your local hardware store?
Yep.
Okay, that's great, Eric. One of the things I want to ask before you go, and thanks for calling in on a Saturday, there's so much content on the TEP website, really good content. You can literally go down the website rabbit hole on TEP with all the energy things. What is the best way to find out about some of the things that you're talking about at the TEP website? Is it under the green energy?
Well, yeah, look under green energy. You can look under new homes. You can look under Guarantee Home. You know, there's a whole section there, and then of course you'll find information on renewable energy. You know, we love solar water heating, we love photovoltaic, but we always suggest that a person try to tighten their house up, make sure their ducts aren't leaking. You know, get some duct sealing, make sure their attics are properly insulated, because you know, we want to be the solar city, but you know what we want to be, Tucson does, but I always say, you know, we want to be the smart solar
city.
The
smart solar city. I love that. I love that. And thanks a lot, and I'll see you very soon. Okay, that was Eric Schober from Tucson Electric Power. Stay tuned. Miles Lewis, brilliant young scientist from Burden Earth Technologies, will talk about a farm in a box. Stay tuned. We'll be right back. Mrs. Green Goes Mainstream. News Talk 790 KNST.
News Talk 790 KNST.
Welcome back, everybody. This is Mrs. Green Goes Mainstream, News Talk 790 KNST, on this very happy, hot Saturday. We heard from Eric Schoberg from Tucson Electric Power. If you have questions and couldn't catch everything that he was talking about, always, always know that you can send an email to me, Gina@MrsGreensWorld.com. or info@MrsGreensWorld.com, and you'll hear back from us. Our guest today is Miles Lewis, who is truly a brilliant young man. He gives me hope for the future. I know he will give you hope for the future. He'll be calling in a few minutes. So I will go through a little bit of excitement. I always, always, always do a shout out for my sponsors. Chapman is my supporter. They make it possible for me to be here. And I'm really excited because they're starting a Going Green team led by none other than yours truly. So we will be not only helping them go green from the inside out, but really making them aware of all the things that Chapman is already doing to be green from the inside out. So we might be turning them a little bit, tad darker shade of green, and help them to more, to just be aware of the practices that they have and little things that they can tweak. I did a YouTube video on the Bob. It's called The Bottom of the Barrel. My friend Scott from Legendary World, we went and filmed it, and it was so much fun. It's just a guy there at Chapman that collects oil in this machine that he bought online, and it was very, very cool. Mrs. Green loves being on YouTube, so check that out. And Chapman, they're great sponsors of UFA Athletics. They do a lot for the community, and, of course, if Mrs. Green is involved, we're going to be having a lot of fun. So I'll be telling stories about that up to and including, I think we start on July 9th. And the other thing I wanted to tell you is Bob Oldfather has lots of shirts that say Tucson, the Solar City. He wants to have them out there. They're no good in my car or at my house. So I'll tell you what, if you take time to send me an email, Gina at Mrs. Green's World, I'll leave a shirt for you at the Clear Channel Studios this coming Monday. If you want to call in, 520-880-5678. I will give out 5 shirts to the first 5 callers, and they're cool shirts. They're black. They have a big sun on them, and they say Tucson, the Solar City. We want to get that word out there. Imagine a branding that says Tucson, the Solar City. So if you do call in, it's 520-880-5678. I will leave you a shirt. I will mail you a shirt. Get your name in here and your email address, because if anything goes wrong, we need an email address. So I think that would be really great. And we are going to wait now for Miles to call back in. But one of the things that I wanted to talk about that I'm upset about, and I try not to have this show be about anything upsetting, but outrage would be a better word, is there was an article in the front page of the Daily Star yesterday about plastic bags and be careful and it's dangerous and, you know, to me, blah, blah, blah. And I just want to point out that I did a lot of research. I'm not a scientist. You have to be a little bit suspicious when you see something that's funded for $30,000 by the American Chemistry Council. And when you read about what they do, it's big chemical companies that are supporting them. It was an extremely small cohort. It could never be considered, in my opinion, a scientific sample. And what I want to point out, because I am such an opponent of plastic bags, I want to point out, did you ever see a reusable bag hanging on a tree when you're driving down the interstate? It's really ugly. And if you start looking at them and looking for plastic bags to fly at your car, you know, sometimes I think people from Europe think we have plastic tree farms when they land at the airport. So do a little bit of research on your own, please. And I would really like you to pay attention to that and know that reusable bags are the way to go. Use your head. You don't pour raw meat into a cloth bag and then not wash the bag. I mean, the article did absolutely infuriate me. And we want to get rid of plastic bags. They are a petroleum byproduct, which means they come from oil. So let me just get on my soapbox for a minute there and just say, use your head. Don't use dirty anything. And when you touch the shopping cart handle, it's disgusting. So that's another thing that you can think of. So we do have some callers for the shirt. The number is 520-880-5678. And we do have Miles back on the line. So please reduce, reuse, and recycle with your reusable bags. I don't even know what else to say. I'm going to start sounding really awful, and I don't want to. So, Miles, are you there?
Yeah, I'm here.
Okay, thank you so much for calling in today. And just a little bit of background, Verdant Earth Technologies, I went and visited out on Campbell here in Tucson, Arizona, the farm, and I was like almost embarrassingly excited. Is that fair to say, Miles?
Yeah, you were stumbling over your words. You were flabbergasted, one thing to say.
He's telling the truth.
It was a pleasure to have you out to the farm, and of course you're always welcome out there.
Yeah, try to get a little bit closer to your, I don't know if you're on speaker, but to your phone, because it's a little bit, the signal's a little bit weak. So tell everybody what Verdant Earth Technologies is and where did the story begin?
Well, so we started off, Verdant Earth Technologies, it's a local startup in Tucson, Arizona, and what we do is we're trying to create new and unique devices and ways to apply the new agricultural technologies coming out in the world, primarily focusing on controlled environment agriculture, which is a fancy way of saying greenhouses. And it started off, my co-founder Josh Hottenstein and myself, we met during our graduate studies at the University of Arizona in the McGuire Entrepreneurship Program through the Eller School of Business. And we hashed out some ideas, and Josh is an IT guy by training, and I'm an agricultural person by training. And so we sat there hashing ideas around with each other and decided, you know, we really might have a chance to make a difference out there and to show people all the really neat technologies that are available these days for crop production.
But, and, you know, in English terms, when I was stumbling over my words, which is eloquently put, there's so many other components to it that are exciting to me. So you're not just looking at alternative agricultural ways to help feed the planet, basically. I mean, that's you began with the end in mind. How are we going to feed the planet with water shortages and, you know, growing population? So you're recycling. Your concept is for using shipping containers, correct?
Correct. So we're taking shipping containers, and we're throwing a mechanism inside that allows you to produce crops and other types of plants to conduct research. And the whole premise of it is that you're using the vertical space available. So you're sort of taking a stab at this vertical farming concept. And then at the same time is you're reducing the volume that you're growing in, so you can reduce the amount of water you're using, reduce the amount of fertilizer you're using, and create products such as lettuce and herbs and other greens that come out that are disease-free, pathogen-free, safe to eat. You won't hear about E. coli and salmonella problems occurring with this. And so it's really a way to address all those issues because, as you mentioned, you know, we have limited resources and, you know, we have to be stewards of the earth and really watch what we do. And, you know, agriculture traditionally has a huge, huge impact on the world. And we're trying to reduce that in every way we can, even if it's small steps at a time.
And you don't need the sun.
No.
I mean, it's a really closed container.
I
kept saying, are you kidding me right now? So let's go with a head of lettuce, okay? Because you really do start the head of lettuce with a seed, right? Then it goes to you take a little clipping. So tell people what I saw that I can't explain on the radio.
Yeah, so what you saw was, we're really no different than any other type of agriculture. It starts with a seed. We plant it inside our favorite material, whether that be soil. In our case, it's a soilless media called rock wool. And then we apply water. We apply fertilizer. We put it inside a hydroponic system, which it accelerates the growth a little bit and allows us to really fine-tune what we're applying to the plant in terms of water and fertilizer. And then magically, 45 days later, we have a nice, beautiful head of lettuce, like what you saw at the farm, compared to traditional forms, which would be germinating in the field, applying hundreds of gallons of water to get a single head of lettuce, and then having the issues associated with the possibilities of contamination by E. coli. And so putting it inside these greenhouse environments, we can grow year-round, we can use less water, we can use less fertilizer, so it's really just a winning combination of things that we do.
And I know one of the things that Josh said is that, you know, it's resource efficient, and it's maximizing the limited resources we have. So, for example, you said use far less. So a head of lettuce that grows, say, in Yuma, Arizona, and I'm not picking on anyone, how many gallons of water does it take to grow one head of lettuce on average? Do you know?
No, not to quote anybody, but the statistics I heard running around were that it takes approximately 100 gallons of water for a single head of lettuce from start to finish.
And how much does your head of lettuce take?
I'm very proud to say we've been able to do it with less than a gallon, using almost half a gallon of water per head of lettuce. We're really proud of that fact. And then at the same time, we're using less than a tenth of the fertilizer.
Okay, we're talking to Miles Lewis from Verdant Earth Technologies. I've got lots more questions. There's lots more to learn about Farm in a Box. Stay tuned. We'll be right back. 520-880-5678 if you want a T-shirt that says Tucson, the Solar City. We'll be right back. Mrs. Green goes mainstream.
You're listening to News Talk 790 KNST.
Welcome back, everybody. This is Mrs. Green goes mainstream. News Talk 790 KNST. Thank you so much for listening today on this hot, happy Saturday. I have to say hot and happy, so I stay happy. We've been interviewing Miles Lewis from Verdant Earth Technology. He has a partner named Josh Hottenstein, who could not be there. And they are experimenting with different types of growing lettuce and other crops. And it's called Farm in a Box. Verdant Earth Technologies is cutting edge in terms of what they're doing to basically prepare us for when things might get a little bit worse. And these 20-foot shipping containers are being turned into mini farms. Listeners, thank you for calling in and saying that you couldn't hear. And Miles and I talked, we spoke off the air, so he's going to sit in one place. He's on a landline. So, Miles, welcome back.
Thank you. Thank you for having me. Can you hear me now?
Oh, that, yes, I can. It's so much better. Okay. Part of what I think is a little bit fun and great listening is you and Josh were, I characterize you as the mad scientist and the venture capital go sell us. Is that a fair partnership with you being the mad scientist? And that's a compliment.
Oh, no, I find it very much a compliment. I grew up always wanting to be. And no, it's a very fair representation, and it's we have a lot of fun with it. It's kind of fun. I get to play the cowboy.
The cowboy farmer.
Yeah, the cowboy farmer, and Josh gets to play the executive, and it's real fun. And sometimes we swap off, and Josh takes care of the crop, and I'm out there negotiating deals. So it's really kind of a fun partnership that we have.
It is. So tell me, I think a couple of technical things that we need to add to the experience is. When you typically grow a head of lettuce, for example, in soil, you fertilize it and the nutrients are theoretically in the soil. I know with lettuce in particular, if it's like iceberg, there's a lot of waste that has to be chopped off. With yours, there isn't. But how do you control both the nutrients and the pesticides when you're pretty much growing the lettuce in water for the most part and not very much water?
Well, we make our own custom fertilizer blends, and then we apply it directly to the water. So, in other words, we've gone through the research that's been conducted by folks such as the University of Arizona, and we take the research they conducted so it doesn't sit on the shelf, and then we know exactly how much the plant needs. And based on that, we're able to sit there and say, okay, great, we know that the plant needs 1 gram of nitrogen and 1 gram of phosphorus. So we make up exactly what the plant needs as opposed to broadcast fertilizing over what we speculate the plant might need and what might already be in the soil. So we're starting with a clean slate and applying literally only what the plant needs so that there's very, very little waste. And as far as pesticides are concerned, we try to be pesticide-free for a variety of reasons. Unhealthy. I don't want a pesticide applicator's license. It's kind of nasty stuff to work with. So we try other methods. So one, growing inside a greenhouse, we exclude everything outside. So we put up insect screening. We have best management practices to ensure that people walking inside the greenhouse, like me, are clean and disease-free and haven't been running around in the field rolling with the bugs. And all those ways help us keep the insects off so you're getting nice, clean food. Unfortunately, this practice can't be applied to all agriculture. And
right.
Pesticides are needed, but we try our best to avoid them.
And then there's, this is kind of a sidebar, but people that listen on a regular basis know I'm the queen of sidebars. When I went into, when you took us over to where they're doing the tomato experimentation, I don't want to steal your thunder, but then they gave me this whole thing about the little tiny wasps, little tiny, teeny wasps that they get from Holland that then go and eat the other flies, and they're teeny tiny. So they're using bugs to control the bugs, healthy pesticides.
Yeah, so in that case, what we're doing is we're using biological control. And what we do is we create a mini ecosystem, if you will. And what happens is we take parasitic wasps, and these aren't, the yellow jackets like you would find outside your home. These are
right,
tiny,
I kept seeing,
wasps.
Where are they? You can't see them.
Yeah, you can't see them, so they're really wonderful. It's almost like the size of a gnat. And they go around and they have particular insects that they prefer to eat, so such as a whitefly or an aphid. And what they do is they go around, they parasitize the young ones, as I showed you, and I gave you the movie Aliens as the reference point. It puts the new generation inside the pests that are destroying our crop.
Well, I did not like that analogy.
it's a terrible one to envision. But
it's okay. I got it.
Yeah, no, it's a great way to describe it.
And it is.
It's really neat, too, because we don't have to use pesticides, and we're just letting nature take care of itself. And so while we never have 100% control, we're not using pesticides, and we're not using damaging chemicals out there. And it's really a fantastic way to go. And we even experiment with ladybugs and lacewings. So it's not just wasps. And, the really gnarly insects you would imagine.
Right. Now, how important is it for the water that you use in terms of nutrition? What kind of water do you use? Do you filter the water? Is it specially treated water? Is it just well water, CAP water? What kind of water do you use?
You can really use almost any type of water. In our particular case, we were fortunate enough to be using well water. We've also used CAP water, just regular tap water coming out of the faucet. And the trick is making sure you have nice, clean water so it's not contaminated
with
heavy metals or anything like that. But essentially, you can use almost anything. There was a lot of research conducted 20, 30 years ago that found out that brackish water high in salt created a tastier tomato. So the water quality, even though it was poor, produced a superior product and just had the most delicious sweet tomatoes. So we're basing it off that a little bit, but... in our case, lettuce doesn't taste too sweet, but
regular
old tap water.
Right, right. Now, what about when I was out there, you told me something, which I, of course, forgot, and I was taking copious notes. Don't you use fans for something? Is it for cooling the water? Is it for the bugs? I don't remember, but I put down fans.
Yeah, we were so one of the problems that commonly occurs in the desert, at least, is this thing called tip burn. And so what it is...
That's right.
I won't bore you with...
But I remember now. Okay.
But it's a calcium disorder. And so what it means is you just end up having a product that looks bad, it tastes bitter. And so one of the ways to combat it that we figured out through research conducted by the universities was applying an overhead fan to it helps break up this calcium disorder and helps you grow in really hot climates like Tucson, Arizona. And so this is one of the methods we use to help us grow throughout the summertime like we are now, where other people cannot.
Right.
If you talk to local gardeners, they always say their lettuce is bolting or sour or bitter. These are some of the things we avoid with this fan technique.
Is it just basically like sunburn? I'm sorry.
Yeah, exactly.
Sunburn on the vegetables. It's good. It makes it taste bitter. Now, what are you going to do when you put the farm in a box and it's a container, a storage unit that you have all this vertical growth? Will there be some type of cooling in there that does the same thing, or do you not need it at all because it's strictly from the sun? Is it heat and the sun or just the sun? You know what I mean? Like if it was in a really hot building, would it get the burn?
Yeah.
Okay.
There's a number of different factors that can affect it. Temperature is one of them.
Okay.
Increased light is one of them. So when we go inside the box, what we're doing is we're starting with a black box. And then we're saying, hey, we only want to apply exactly what the plant needs, and that's in the form of light, that's in the form of temperature, maintaining the right humidity, and then again with the fertilizer and the water, only applying exactly what it needs. So when we're going inside the box, we create the most perfect environment we could possibly have for the lettuce. We want to make it so happy that it grows so fast and so big and so tasty. It's really just trying to eliminate all the extraneous factors that we really just don't want, such as the thermal load from the sun. I mean, if you look at the sun and what all the energy it's putting out, we're only using a very narrow wave band. So, for instance, what humans can see between 400 and 700 nanometers, we're using the exact same. And then everything else on the outside of that, which accounts for heat and UV radiation, we exclude that because we just don't need it.
Okay. And there are a lot of exciting things going on. You've been getting great press, Discovery News, and you're not just experimenting at the U of A. You're taking it to another level. When we come back, we're going to take a very quick break. I'd love you to tell about the Clean Tech Open. Miles Lewis from Burden Earth Technologies, Mrs. Green Goes Mainstream, News Talk 790 KNST. We'll be right back.
News Talk 790 KNST.
Welcome back, everybody. This is Mrs. Green Goes Mainstream, News Talk 790 KNST, and we are just so lucky to have Miles Lewis from Verdant Earth Technologies. Basically, it's a concept of a farm in a box that uses less water, is nutritionally rich, and can go from seed to the shelf in 45 days. They are making things happen with it. Miles, thank you so much for calling in. And just another shout out, we have two more shirts we can give away for Tucson, the Solar City. If you just tuned in, 520-880-5678, call in and let Roger know your name and your address, and we will get a shirt to you and start branding Tucson as the Solar City. What a concept. Okay, so quickly, two things, Miles. One is, I know that you are getting good press. You won an Eller Award for the School of Entrepreneurship from the McGuire Center, and it's such a prestigious school. It's, you know, that says something on its own. And then that's our university. You are regional semifinalists in the Clean Tech Open, which is a national competition that identify promising clean tech startups, hugely competitive. And you're one of 15 semifinalists, correct?
Correct.
So what did you have to do to compete in that?
We had to give our souls. No.
you had to sell your soul. I know you better than that. You did not.
No, it was. There was about 100 teams that originally had applied. And as you had said, it's a national competition. And we submit our business plan. We submit a lot of the paperwork, some of the activities we're conducting right now. You do an interview here and there. And then a panel goes through and reviews every business plan and all the companies and then narrows it down to the 15, as you said. And it was really quite painless when everything is said and done. We're very flattered that we were named a semifinalist. And, it's just been real fun because we get to work with all sorts of neat folks on the mentoring side. So in addition to just getting our name out there, they're providing us with mentors that help us enlarge our scope of sustainability and help us think outside the box, as Josh and I can only do so little on our own. So it's been really kind of a magical little thing. And then we're headed off to San Jose in the next month for the semifinalist competition, where we'll have a booth and we'll be able to interact with all the other teams out there. So it's really going to be kind of a fun event for us.
You have no idea how much I wish I could go. I mean, talk about stumbling over my words. I looked on the website for the Clean Tech Open, and I, needless to say, don't ever act like I'm a scientist. I would really be stumbling over my words. It's like there's a lot going on.
And we're stumbling over ourselves, too. It's very flattering. I mean, there's real giants out there who are addressing things from energy efficiency and air and water and renewable energy and green building. And then, we were lucky enough to get in there with a little bit of agriculture here.
With the way that we're going to feed ourselves, it's just to me so exciting about what you're doing. It gives me so much hope for the future when I meet bright, enterprising young men like you that are not just having your ideas, but you're doing something about it. Now, if you
win, I hope
you
can do you justice.
You will when you win. Let's just say when you win, the one promise you have to make is that you'll call in and share with me and our audience what happened regardless, because to me, you've already won by just getting in. So
we're one of, I think we're the only Arizona team actually to progress to the regional semifinals. So it was very flattering actually.
And if you do win or when you do win, let's just act like begin with the end in mind. Is there venture capital to help you get to the next level? What's the upside other than all of the good things that have happened already and your name getting out there? Is there money down that?
So we get to compete. They narrow it down to one winner per region, and then each team will receive about $20,000 in cash or some form of service or software or something like that. And then of those five, the national winner receives about $250,000 in a prize package. So there's a significant amount of money behind it for us if we're able to win this, when we win this, excuse me.
Right, right. And I mean, when you're doing a startup, I don't think people, unless you've done it, which I have several times, it takes money to get started, just in terms
Absolutely.
Of your website presence and all of those things, doing your performance. Everything takes time and people and resources, and so I'm just really proud of you. And I hope you know that I'll be tracking you down like a dog if you don't keep us informed. I think the competition is on July 27th. So we have a lot of U of A activity that goes on, and people love to hear back about what happened. They like to hear the next chapter in the story. It's never the end, but especially our solar partners over there with the solar car and the solar house. We talk to them from D.C. So I don't know if that's a Saturday, but if it is, if there was any way you could call in, we'll be in touch.
Now, we could arrange something.
All right. I want to ask you this. What about when you talk about some of these things in the beginning stages, they're cost prohibitive. You've actually addressed that in your concept, that it will be, because it maximizes resources, the cost for a head of lettuce, will it be competitive with commercial greenhouse structures?
Yeah, we are ultimately hoping it will be. And part of what's so exciting is that while right now we do have issues with the energy requirements of these systems, is that we're entering this whole new realm of LEDs and solar powers and alternative energies. So it's really giving us a new edge to compete on this, to make it not cost prohibitive, so that everyone can afford to do this, so that the technology can be commercially viable.
Now,
so it's very exciting, you know, listening to your the TEP conversation earlier, you know, with photovoltaics and everything. Yeah, it's opening up lots and lots of possibilities for us. It's a very exciting time for us.
Well, I read this issue, this quarter's issue of Biz Tucson, which is absolutely fabulous, and a guy named Roger Angel is on the cover, and they call him the Angel, of course, for his name is really Roger Angel, for developing a solar technology that will just be so much more effective than anything we even have right now. So that is, there's just nothing but hope for the future going on at the University of Arizona, and you and Josh are two examples. So will you be able to label your product as organic when it goes to market?
No, the organic label, well, I should take that back. Yes, we will be able to, and it's going to depend on our nutrient solution
right,
that we're using. So for right now, we're not considered organic. And part of that is we're able to be cost competitive, as you had mentioned, with
right,
the traditional chemical-based fertilizers. But again, we're entering this new time where organic-based fertilizers are really becoming are lowering themselves in cost. So they become a real possibility for us, so we can address that market if that's what the consumer would like.
And one of the things that I know, it will not be sprayed with 17 pesticides like the Dirty Dozen that has been published all over the place by the Environmental Working Group. And it, to me, regardless if it gets the organic label or not, it's going to be so much healthier than a lot of what you can do that's, you know, buy that's commercially produced. And
absolutely,
I think that's really exciting. So if people want to come to visit you, is that a problem? How much? You can't have traffic in there from time to time, but if someone really wanted to, is that something they could arrange?
Yeah, you know, I love giving people tours. I mean, you saw me. You couldn't shut me up when I was out there.
I know. And with,
so,
between
yeah,
the two of us,
like
that was hard. Okay.
Absolutely, we can give a tour.
And they can always go through me. So I just want to, again, thank you for being on the show. I wish you and Josh the very best. I appreciate not just your taking the time, but for what you're doing to the planet. And I say all the time, I love hanging around young people because...
Oh, well, thank you. No, we're very flattered that you featured us.
What you have is hope for the future, and you're not just giving us false hope. You've got your walk in the walk, and I just so hope you win the competition. And for those of you that may have just tuned in, shame on you, just kidding. This was Miles Lewis from the University of Arizona, graduate, brilliant young scientist from Verdant Earth Technology, which is basically a farm in a box. I wish you well. Everybody have a happy, safe Saturday. Try to stay cool during this peak heat, and tune in again next week. It's 4th of July weekend. This is News Talk 790 KNST. Mrs. Green Goes Mainstream. Have a great weekend.